It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Yeah, all right, here we go. Friday. Cofield and Company. We are in the middle of the action. Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. We got the 55-plus TVs on all the NCAA games. Some good ones going down right now, so we'll keep you updated on what's going on this afternoon, what happened this morning, what's coming up this evening in the second round of the NCAA tournament. Let's say full day number two at the NCAA tournament. Damon is with us. He is the company today. We have some good guests coming up. Willie Ramirez. Towards the end of the hours, we'll get a preview of the Lady Rebels game as Lindy LaRock's team is making the run in the NCAA tournament, starting in L.A. against Creighton. Damon, what's going on, buddy?
A whole lot, Steve. This is a very exciting time, and I can't wait to talk about Creighton because we already know that that's in the bag. So,
from the Desiree Young.
Yeah, just wanted to say that.
She's confident. That's okay. How have you fared this morning, or did you go light on the betting?
Light, Steve. It's today I tried to take the approach of, you know what? Nobody can shoot that well in college basketball. Let's take a couple of first half unders, and even that burned me.
Are you referencing? Oh, you're just saying college basketball in general?
Yes, we all see it. You know, we're looking at Colorado, Florida right now, 53-54. You know, it's not that high scoring. So I was just, you know what? Maybe you know, try to zig.
Well, I'll say this: that's probably not the best example.
It's not because I'm like, oh, it's 15 minutes left.
I get your point. It's 56-54, Florida, in a big game. I have some action in this one. I'll explain a little later. I actually have both sides. That's why I don't sell picks, but I'll explain. Have you been following what I've been talking about with future bets? We'll get into that one. And then Yale. I do have Auburn going to my Final Four in our bracket contest, but I would love to see one of my Final Four teams knocked out. Ooh, look at that. Yale blocked from behind. It's a clean block, and there's no foul called. Okay. Actually, I'm correct. Let me correct myself. The foul got called, but I'm making a reference to Samford. Samford and Canvas, can I speak? Kansas last night. But anyway, Yale is up 44-43 on Auburn with 15 minutes left. So we got two good games going down in front of us, and I think the Colorado-Florida game is going to freaking fly way the hell over. But I get your point. The trend coming in, Damon, in general over the years is teams play a little bit tight to open the first game, and that things are kind of ugly. We saw some ugly games yesterday. Today, though, and I'm not doing, there'll be different parts of the show we sprinkle with the Mountain West Conference theme and how it's doing so far, because it ain't getting much better today. You know, and I can't stand the fact that San Diego State puffs out its chest in an arrogant fashion, basically to say, hey, you know, we're the only ones who win in this conference. I mean, right now, it's kind of looking like that, because today was not a good day. Last night and yesterday was not a good day, but San Diego State did win in an early start, as the Aztecs took out UAB in a 5-12 game, 69-66, and lo and behold, I guess Jaden Ledee is pretty good outside of the conference too, isn't he?
He's all right, Steve. I mean, that superstar treatment just seems to follow him all around the country, I guess.
Well, you know, I didn't look at the end of the game to see fouls drawn. I'll have to check that on the alternate box score, but he did finish today with 32 points. 8 rebounds. He had 4 fouls in the game, which he almost never gets called for fouls. But he was able to log, again, 35 minutes. And he actually, when he went to the line, he made his free throws. That's his one Achilles heel, is that from time to time he gets a little loose on the foul line. But Ledee was 9 of 10 from the line. San Diego State, not unbelievable, you know, good on defense, but good. 38% shooting. That shows how high their standard is for good defense. 38% shooting by UAB, and the Blazers were only able to go 7-20 from deep, which isn't terrible, but 35%. So San Diego State moves on. But we do have to get to, let's get to yesterday first as we set up today. Because yesterday is a prime example of what I think people are looking for early in the tournament. Now, I don't know that they want the upset darlings to make the Sweet 16. In fact, television ratings kind of prove that the Oaklands of the world making the Sweet 16 is not great. That all said, I don't care about the TV ratings. I think the magical part of the tournament is that the little guys actually get to square off against big guys who will never play them during the season. And if they do, it'll be a deal where it's like, oh, okay, we'll do you know, 9 games here and 0 at your place. You actually get them on a neutral floor. And we came this close last night with Kansas and Samford. And I know that one got you worked up. We have the call of this play near the end of the game. It's 90-89. There's 15 seconds left. Kansas gets a press break, and this could have been one of the best blocks we've ever seen in tournament history.
Gets the ball in. Ahead to Timberlake on the run.
It's a block.
And he missed the shot.
Man, with the game on the line, that is an incredible block that just got taken away from Samford.
Gene Steratore, do you agree with us?
I do agree with you guys. It's a great block by Samford right there.
Okay, now there's a lot going on there. One, it was a clean block. I mean, I looked, I don't know how many times you watched the replay. I watched the replay a lot. And by the way, Kansas went on to win and escape. And Kansas is dinged up right now, but it's still Kansas. You're supposed to beat Samford. I watched the block from all different angles and up and down the body. Like, if there's any, listen, if on a block like that, if there's any part of the body that hits the offensive player's body, I can understand a foul call. That was 1,000,000,000% a clean foul. There's nothing you could have pinned a block on, correct?
Nothing, Steve. The only thing that I feel that the reason the foul was called is because the Kansas player went for a dunk. And when he lost the ball, he lost control of his body. His landing is what caused the foul there.
You're probably right.
If he blocks a layup, That's play on. But the fact that he loses control in the air because the ball got knocked out of his hands, that's where the foul is. The foul was, hey, he lost control of his body in the air, and somehow that's your fault.
And you hear the analyst on CBS was like, block! Oh, no! And then the worst part of that audio, and thanks to CBS for the audio, the worst part about the audio is how much does it pain Gene Steratore, former NFL and college official, to actually admit that was a bad call. You can hear it in his voice. He's like, I gotta admit, that was a clean block.
And then the way it was phrased to him, too, like, you can't disagree with us on this.
Yeah, challenging him. Go ahead, Gene. Try, buddy, because we know you defend these guys at every turn. Try on this one. And you get a block like that, and then after the game, it's like, well, I mean, Samford had plenty of chances to get the job done, DeMond.
And I hate it when people say that, like, oh, the game doesn't come down to one play. If you would have made that three that you attempted in the first half, we wouldn't have been talking about this with how close the margin was. You can't do that when it comes to, I'm going to say, how well that out-of-bounds play worked on the previous possession. That elevator play where they freed up the player for that three out of that out-of-bounds play, clearly that they had a guy who could make a big-time three if need be. So I don't want to hear that, hey, if you would have scored 5 points earlier in the game somehow or played some better defense 3 or 4 possessions ago, you wouldn't have been in this situation and that play wouldn't have mattered. Every play matters, and of course, when it comes to the end of the game, those plays matter the most in a close game.
A call at the end of the Utah State game may have cost UNLV any chance. You know, if they had kept winning in the Mountain West Conference tournament, they'd have to win it. But in terms of the season hopes, realistic season hopes, that stupid 5-point foul in that Utah State game, that call changed the outlook of the entire season. So, of course, calls down the stretch matter. So games right now, Yale and Auburn are in a game of runs. Yale came all the way back from 9, went on their own 9-0 run. But now Auburn's run out to a 7-point lead, 53-46 with 13 minutes left. Colorado just went on a run against Florida. That's a 10 against a 7, 12 minutes left in that one at 65-58. And we'll certainly get into, I consider this, and we're very hardcore on what's an upset and what's not an upset. I consider FAU over Northwestern an upset no matter what because of the conferences. And Florida Atlantic had every opportunity in this game to win it as an 8, to win it as a favorite. I still don't care that they were favored. I still believe it's an upset. I still will root for the little guy. By the way, to Mountain West Conference fans, The school I went to was in the Big Ten. I hate every Big Ten school. I root against every Big Ten school. Now, maybe you'll come back and say, well, the situation's a little different. The Big Ten's already gifted 900 bids. The Mountain West needs wins for its reputation. But to the point I've been making for a couple of weeks now, I don't root for rival schools. I don't like the rest of the Mountain West Conference. I don't like the rest of the Big Ten. We're hanging out here at Treasure Island. Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, come on down. The madness is on. We got a couple of really good games happening right in front of us. And then we've got the evening session. We'll get you updated on what happened yesterday and also this morning again with that Florida Atlantic Northwestern game, which was a hell of a tilt. DeMond's back in the Findlay Toyota Studios as we roll on here on a Friday.
House explodes to the rim, and he scoop shots home. He slides through three defenders. It's an 8-0 run. It's 51-38.
Now, that's some New Mexico basketball that we watched in the Mountain West.
Dylan Hunter across Clemson calls timeout. The best life for the Lobos since the early stage of the contest.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
What a freaking nightmare. You hear Westwood One. I think that was Steve Lapis as the color analyst. And Lapis does a lot of Mountain West. And I'm sure the CBS folks who are mostly Northeast based are all like, Steve, you told us this Mountain West was good. It sucks. Like I said, I'm not going to saddle the show with that, because there's a lot of good college basketball action. We will examine it as the show goes along. By the way, Curtis Terry, nice enough to sit in for a little bit with us. Of course, former Rebel. And I'm not even going to say a backer of the Mountain West, because I'm not comfortable saying I'm a backer of what's happening right now. I've defended it. 77-56, Clemson beat New Mexico. We are a defender of the West, and Arash Markazi is a defender of the West. And Arash is on the horn right now from the Sporting Tribune. He's also a defender of the little guy. Right, Arash?
I am a man of the people, Steve. You've known this for many years.
Yes.
I am a man of the people.
So I'm sure yesterday you were probably very fired up about Samford with an M, Samford, and yes, also Oakland. Let's get to Samford, because I know that you were watching, you were tweeting about it. What do you think of the Kansas-Samford game and the end of the game?
Listen, we do need a way to review calls in the final 2 minutes. I'm not saying from the opening tip to the last buzzer that we need to review like every single call, but the last 2 minutes of a game, when you talk about these could be the last games of basketball a lot of these players play, you got to review a play like that. It's just such an egregious missed call there, the cleanest block you will ever see. You know, sometimes you'll see a block where maybe like he touches or grazes someone's pinky. This was all ball, 100% all ball, cost Samford the game in my view. There should be a way to review that play.
Curtis, you're shaking your head yes. Seriously? You want inside of 2 minutes, you'd want fouls reviewed?
100%.
Really?
I'm with Rosh all the way on that one. I think it just the integrity of the game is jeopardized in that situation. Obviously, I think naturally Kansas or the likes are going to get that call when it comes down to that situation. But in order to maintain the integrity of the game and have it play out as it should, I mean, that was clearly a block. And I think the referee, like in most cases, they just assumed the foul was going to be made, and so they made that call. You know, I mean, they predetermined that call. And it's unfortunate because I think, like Arash said, Samford was playing a really good game, especially late, and they probably would have won that game and busted some more brackets. But more than that, just would have added to the madness, and that's the beauty of March Madness in my eyes.
How about the Kentucky game where we get a new hero emerge in this kid, Jack Gulkey, who's like 30 years old, and all he does is shoot threes. Like, it's not even a joke. All he does is shoot threes, and he took down Goliath, Arash.
I love stories like this because whenever, you know, Pittsnoggle, remember back in the day, like,
oh, yeah,
West Virginia? March Madness is beautiful in so many ways because, I mean, there are players that you become enthralled with and that you want to see do well that you know absolutely have zero chance to play in the NBA, but it doesn't matter. That's the beauty of March Madness. It's the beauty of the first round. You can get, like, upsets like this, and so that's been my favorite one so far, especially when you see a blue blood like Kentucky go down. And then the other thing I love about March Madness is we all have to kind of figure out where some of these schools are from, right?
Yeah.
You like Oakland, like not in Northern California, in Michigan, that Oakland, Stetson, the Hat, I'm familiar with them. Where are they from? Looks like they might be from Texas. No, they're from Florida. Like this is such an exciting time for a lot of these smaller schools that we have not heard of, or maybe we've heard of, but we don't even know where they're from.
Arash, check that. Come on, are we going to get a new trend on this? And we'll see if Arash wants to be in on this one. Do we get a new trend in the NCAA tournament? Will we get a daily cracker of the day?
I hope we do, because Gokey, he was really proud of that title. He said that was the coolest thing that he received in all of this praise that he's getting, the cracker of the day. So I'm down for it. If he's willing to accept it, why should we not, you know, bestow that honor on someone else time and time again if a new cracker of the day arises?
Arash, you're a man of color. Are you comfortable with the cracker of the day?
Listen, if the player's okay with it, I guess I'm okay. I mean, that seems a little bit more than I would like.
Right.
Your cracker doesn't sound like the best terminology, but hey, it's March Madness. Let's go have some fun.
Curtis, you're turning away from the mic. What happened?
Oh, nothing.
Okay.
That's awesome. I didn't hear that one
yes.
until just now, until DeMond broke the news.
Oh,
we're towing the line on that one, but as long as it's a saltine cracker, I'm all for it.
It's been building. It's been building, because usually they'll have the award at different times during the year, and they have a little signage from grocery stores. So it's working that way.
Sounds
I figured
good.
I could bring it up.
I'm here for it.
Why not? Arash, where are you hanging today? Were you you were like all fired up yesterday about going to the south end of the strip. I didn't know you northerners go south.
No, listen. So, I mean, the South Point's fantastic. When you talk about being a man of the people, no entry fee at all. Fantastic there. $1 popcorn, $2 hot dog, $3 pizza, $4 beer. I mean, you can't beat these prices. So that's where I went yesterday. Today I was at Sahara. I'll be at the Strat. The Atomic
nice.
Golf, by the way, it just opened up. That looks amazing. So listen, you know, I allow the amazing tourists that come in to support our amazing city in the resort corridor, where they have $100 entry fee and $500 couches. You guys can enjoy that. That's fantastic. But I am with the people, Steve, and you know that.
Yes. Mr. Ruffin here at Treasure Island always makes sure there is no admission fee. You can come in to the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar and find your table, play away, and we've got a great crowd here at Treasure Island. Let's get to some stuff on the Sporting Tribune, especially with some left coast feel to it. I don't know much about the NWSL. One of your folks have a story that popped up on ESPN.com on the Soccer League.
Listen, it is an amazing women's professional league. I mean, for the past 25 years, they've been trying to make a successful North American women's professional soccer league, and they finally have it in place now. And the investment in women's sports that we've seen, like, over the past couple of years, certainly with women's college basketball as well, and we'll see that. But the NWSL specifically, we have two teams, one in Los Angeles, one in San Diego, that draw 20,000 fans. They pack the soccer stadium, and they have big-time investment. They have big-time names that are supporting these two teams. So it's fantastic.
Arash is with us from the Sporting Tribune. All right, a couple of L.A. stories, at least for now. Caleb Williams is an L.A. guy, and we got a double L.A. angle on this one. Caleb Williams on his pro day, and then Keenan Allen, who has been jettisoned to the Bears, was there. What's the vibe around that whole thing?
Well, I mean, that basically was a slam dunk. I mean, obviously, once the Chicago Bears traded away Justin Fields, you knew that they were doing that because they were going to draft Caleb Williams. And then when they made the trade to bring in Keenan, and the fact that Keenan Allen was at Caleb Williams' pro day at USC, and just having covered Keenan these last couple of years with the Chargers, I mean, you cannot have a better security blanket, wide receiver, friend than Keenan Allen. So, listen, I think Chicago made the right move. And perhaps I'm biased saying this because I've covered him while he was at USC. I think Caleb Williams is a transcendent talent. He'll be fantastic in Chicago. But this was a cool moment. Again, he did not throw and he did not do a whole lot when he was at the Combine. We saw what he could do. And some of those throws, Steve, again, we saw them on Saturday. But to see them once again in person, and the scouts were there, he's the number one pick. That is a slam dunk. That is happening.
Arash is with us. I'm still having a little trouble coming to grips. Well, we have the crazy Otani gambling story, but also how much of the Korea series did you watch? I still kind of don't understand. I was looking at the time change. There was a way to do this so that Americans could watch it on the West Coast in Otani's market and not be 3 o'clock in the morning. What do you think of the time on this and the delivery of it? And then, apparently we didn't get the Dodgers almost anywhere here, and L.A. had trouble getting the Dodgers for game 2.
It was terrible. I mean, the games were on ESPN, but if you were in Southern California or Las Vegas or effectively in that footprint for Spectrum. The game was blocked out ESPN. And again, I talked to a lot of my friends out here in Vegas, and to be honest, in Southern California as well, who don't have Spectrum. And so if that was the case, you couldn't see the game, or you had to go to weird ways. And again, this is Major League Baseball, again, trying to grow the sport globally. So on one hand, you want to give them credit for having two games in Seoul, South Korea. But on the other hand, you have the Major League debut. It's not Major League Day. The Dodgers debut of Shohei Ohtani. And you're having it at 3 a.m. Pacific time, local time in Los Angeles or Vegas. And you can't watch the game. So it's either it's in the middle of the night or it's on a channel that you can't get. So how did I consume it? I got up, when I say late, I got up for the end of the games.
Yeah.
So game one, I saw that the Dodgers kind of complete that exciting game. And to be honest, game two was kind of exciting as well. But to be honest, Steve, I mean, the focus was on what was happening kind of off the field as well.
Hey, what do we do with this? I'm sure there's going to be a deep dive if baseball wants to try to freaking cover it up. It ain't going to happen. People are going to dig on this one. It's weird.
No, and listen, I mean, and until Shohei talks, and again, clearly he's not going to talk without an attorney by his side. I think they tried that once, and it went terribly wrong. So they're going to let their attorney speak for it. The Dodgers, from everyone I've talked to, I mean, the way that they're handling this, like they've never seen this before in terms of two PR directors standing guard in front of Shohei Ohtani's locker room. Following game two of this series in Korea. Now they're coming back home in Los Angeles. You can only expect that media scrutiny to intensify. But listen, by the way, kudos to Major League Baseball for the 6 p.m. Eastern Friday news dump. Not that it's a surprise that they are going to formally investigate this matter, which they have to. There was no doubt that they had to look into this. But if this is what it sounds like, if this is basically Shohei paying off the debt or helping out a friend, that's not a problem. If this turns into Shohei Ohtani has a gambling problem or worst case doomsday scenario, put a few bucks down on baseball games. And again, Steve, we're talking about a player the likes we've never seen before or have not seen since Babe Ruth, where he pitches plus he hits. There's no player in the history of baseball that has more control when it comes to like who can win or lose a game than Shohei. Now again, baseball, from everything we've heard, is not a part of this. But like the fact that we have gambling, a gambling controversy, a gambling scandal, but this is not, you know, this is 2024. This isn't 20 years ago. Gambling, sports betting is legal in 40 states. Major League Baseball has sponsorships with FanDuel and DraftKings, and you go down the list. So they got to figure this out.
Yep, no doubt. All right, Arash, I'm going to call you or text you over the weekend. We're hanging somewhere. Man of the people. We're watching games somewhere, okay?
Let's do it. I love it. I'll talk to you soon, Steve.
There he is. Arash Markazi, Sporting Tribune. All right, so we got developments, Curtis, in the Colorado-Florida game as Colorado just went to the line a bunch of times. Todd Golden apparently pissed off our good buddy Bill Clinton, ref. Eric Curry.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me. I'm surprised, though, that Florida's losing right now. And I said this before, I've somehow been able to turn on the TV almost every night during the week and catch a Florida game.
Oh, boy. Another and one that just got Golden pissed off. Now, Colorado just went for another plus one. They could go up 10. Keep going.
And it's funny because assistant coach at Florida, Carlin Hartman, used to be assistant here at UNLV with Coach Kevin Kruger. So I follow those guys. I follow Florida. I think Florida's a really good team. But obviously, and UNLV played against Colorado earlier this year down in Daytona Beach. And Colorado, well, they didn't. I'm sorry. They were kind of was looking forward to that one. And I've had my eye on Colorado, and I'm surprised that they got to where they are right now. But again, with the NCAA tournament, it's about getting hot at the right time, and they're playing some really good basketball, and they've got a really good lead guard in KJ Simpson, and that's really all it takes.
85-75 in that one. Seven left. 5.5 left. Auburn's up 6 on Yale. So we'll get you more updates on the way back. Get into UNLV and the NIT a little bit. Also break down some of the earlier games and that crazy game last night. Good. Kentucky's out. That's what this tournament's all about. And Jack Golke or Bulky or whatever the kid's name is, the former rideshare driver or delivery guy. I think he was a Uber or whatever delivery guy. Everyone around Michigan and Michigan State knows him, except they didn't grab him. Oakland did, and Oakland took down the Giants.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Boy, oh boy. This is like watching the opposite of what ills the Mountain West Conference. And what I mean, we're watching Florida and Colorado. And what I believe what ills the Mountain West Conference, and I've said it for years, everyone builds to play this physical style so it can beat San Diego State. You get to the tournament, and then you can't score. Mm-hmm. And in the SEC, you were built to beat Alabama and Kentucky and even a team like Auburn that plays pretty good defense. And Florida's a high-flying team. They're not playing defense. Colorado's talented. They're going to score 105. Eddie Lampkin cannot be stopped. Let's go, big fella. He just got fouled again. It's 88-77 with 5.5 minutes left, Curtis.
I didn't see that one coming. Like we just said off the air, I mean, with Colorado, I think they're a really good team. In the middle of the season, they had DeSilva and Williams were both missed a period of time. And I thought that was going to do them in, but they found a way to compete enough and win enough games. And going into the season, being preseason top 25, you see why. Because they've got the pieces across the board. And like we said, with KJ Simpson at the point and a big guy like Lampkin on the inside who has experience, I mean, that's all it takes to put it together and play good and play hot at the right time.
Man. So I have Colorado money line in this because I also bet Florida 2 days after last season to win the national title.
Okay.
To plan on hedging it if they made a run. It doesn't look like they're making a run.
Nope.
So
they got to make a run in this game first.
They had Florida 125-1 to win the national title. I think they went off at 60-1. It's about the only good bet I made in terms of trying to hedge. But yeah, Colorado's getting the job done here. And Yale is very dangerous. I don't know if you watched the game on Saturday that got them in against Brown where they were down six with 22 seconds left. And they can shoot the three. And right now they are down. They just went down six with 4 minutes left. So it's been a good tournament so far.
Yeah. I mean, this is the best time of the year, I think, when you get to the NCAA tournament. And there's talk about expanding it to get more teams in. And I understand that. I think it's mostly financially. So there's going to be more money made and more money to be distributed. But I don't know if you really need a ton more teams in there because I think it's very competitive as it is.
What they want is as the conferences consolidate and get bigger and bigger and bigger, right, the big ones, they want, like, the ability to have 13 teams in.
But that's ridiculous because you don't even get that many teams in right now. Like the Big East, the whole big gripe about the Big East, honestly, I don't think the Big East should have had more teams in. I think it's perfect where it was.
I don't judge postseason on what a season was. I will say this. The Big East does not look very motivated in the NIT.
Right.
At all.
But I think on the course of the season, though, I think that's the tough part. And I don't know where I saw this, but when it comes down the whole net, the KenPom, all the numbers, for a computer, it makes a lot of sense. I think for us average Joes, it's hard to decipher and make sense of it because I think there's a lot of really good teams from the eye test that people that know basketball that their numbers may not stack up, whether that's because of injury or guys playing through injury or whatever the situation may be. That doesn't get calculated into that human error aspect of it. And that's what's unfortunate because I think there's teams that are left out that should make it, and there's teams that clearly get in, like Virginia, that should not even be in the sniffing of the NCAA tournament.
Damon, where are you today on expansion of the tournament? What has the NCAA tournament done for you and the NIT done for you?
I think the number where it's at, it should stay exactly the same because expansion, it's got to mean something to get in. The regular season has to mean something. And then those teams that don't make it, we see that the NIT, I still think that it's an exciting tournament where if you do have stars like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, where if he's that big of a star, he can still make it to the Pat McAfee show while being in the NIT and Indiana State not making it to the March Madness NCAA tournament.
Say the kid's name again.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
A.K.A. Robbie Avila.
Yeah, so the chubby kid. Which, by the way, I believe, we'll have to get into this topic later on. I believe as a chubbo, I have the right to fat shame a little bit. You thin people, when did they bring ice cream out for the NC State big fella last night? What are we doing?
Yeah, DJ Burns, that was clearly fat shame. And Steve, you're right. You should be offended by that.
I want an apology from Evan Washburn. I talked about Washburn yesterday with that 1993 hair where he's got this blonde, like, tip dye job. You're going out there fat-shaming other people? Come on now. Not right. Boy, Colorado. Up 13 now. 4.5 minutes left.
And you mentioned DJ Burns. I had the privilege to call the NC State BYU game at Michelob Ultra at Mandalay Bay the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And BYU, we know what BYU can do in their high scoring. They shoot a lot of threes. But NC State played a really good game, and they got kind of hosed at the end. Their coach got kicked out, a player on the bench got kicked out, a starter got kicked out in like a little scuffle. But they're a really good team, and you talk about getting hot at the right time. They run the table in the conference tournament, and then they come in and they're playing really good right now. But Burns, I don't care, big, small, in between, the boy can play basketball. Just like Robbie Avila at Indiana State. I called his game right after Thanksgiving as well. And he gets it done.
Yeah.
Just bottom line.
I think you guys are actually, and I think this tournament has presented evidence that we do need to expand it by a little bit. Now, 84 sounds aggressive. That would be 16 more teams.
Right.
But something in between, I don't know how it would all break down. Listen, you and I watch basketball up close with UNLV. We watch a lot of basketball during the year. You mentioned all the other games you call. There's so many coin flip spots. And what I consider a coin flip spot basically is a game that is somewhere in the five range on either side with 5 minutes left.
Right.
There, you know, it's like even this tournament, like you watch it and you're like, this team sucks. Like after they lose a buzzer beater, you know, or the conference stinks. Like when you lose close games sometimes. And some years, say you have 11 close games. I forget what the Rebels' record was. I was tracking it inside of five, and it kind of evened out. It got off to a bad start,
right.
Then it kind of evened out. There's so many close games in college basketball. That's why after the regular season, sometimes we don't know who really are the best, whatever it is, 32 at large. It's also an opportunity to let some more of the little guys in. I know they're not going to get all of those spots. They're probably going to get like 20%. But I think a bigger tournament, and there's still going to be teams that complain. But if we go to freaking somewhere in the 70s or in the 80s and people are still complaining, that's enough.
It's a slippery slope. I mean, it's where's that sweet spot? And I think, again, you do – in the conversation of trying to figure out who gets in blue bloods versus not, it's tough to decide.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Holy moly. All right, we got some good ones. We'll see if Florida can make a run down the stretch here. They're down 7, ball in hand. It's 94-87 Colorado on top of Florida, 2 minutes left. But the game of games right now, Curtis, is Yale and Auburn, and Yale just nailed a 3 to go up 73-72. Came down, ball in hand, miss, offensive rebound. So they got it, and they're up with 1:12 left. Let's bring in Willie Ramirez, who I know is a big fan of the Madness. Willie, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, guys? How are you? I've got a sportsbook-like atmosphere going here with three TVs.
Nice.
I do have the women going on the big one, and then I'm flipping through everything on the two smaller TVs. So, yeah, it's madness in the house. Kahlua doesn't know what to think.
Kahlua, third birthday?
Kahlua turned 3 yesterday.
Nice.
The third straight year that he's gone. You know, Curtis can attest to this. You know, back in the day, you're out at the clubs, right? For me, you're at Tramps, you're at the Shark Club. For Kahlua, it's become an annual trip to Tails Pet Resort on his birthday. He spends the whole day there. They put the hat on him. They bring out the cake, the whole thing. So, yeah, he had a big shindig over at Tails yesterday.
Do you let Kahlua get a little bit loose with the food? I mean, I know it appears he's on a strict diet because the dog is freaking yoked.
No. The next time we go to the healthy, it's called Healthy Tails. I'll let him pick out some stuff. For the most part, though, if I'm on meal prep, he's on meal prep. End of story.
There's no cheat days for Kahlua, huh?
No.
I love it.
We may do a shot. If the Lady Rebels win, we may do a quick shot of Tito's or something, but that's it.
Uh-oh. And a shot of Kahlua.
The heroes
shot
in this tournament.
Kahlua,
there you go. The heroes in this tournament that emerged yesterday with the Golkey kid, and now we got a Pulakitis, who's going crazy with 6 threes for Yale. So we got 1:12 left, 73-72. All right, well, let's talk, before we get to the running Rebels in the NIT, let's talk about the Lady Rebels, who, it's a long time off, isn't it, before they play the games, and you just wonder what that does to your rhythm when you're hot as a pistol. But give us your narrative on the lead into this game, and you know, certainly Lindy wants to get her team to the next level and start winning games in the tournament.
Well, I think what's interesting is how confident they're talking. There's, you know, it's not necessarily the type of vernacular that you would expect to hear from a Lindy LaRocque coach team, especially coming, you know, where she comes from in terms of, you know, coaching for Tara Vanderveer. But they seem pretty dang confident in the way that they are, especially Desi's comments, right, after the opponent was revealed. I just think that they're playing with a totally different mentality, and it's not to knock the first two teams that, of course, we saw other players, you know, other stars on this team the last 2 years, losing in Arizona and then losing to Michigan down in Baton Rouge. But I just think that the collective effort and the main players outside of Desi have sort of instilled a team-like confidence with the entire squad. and it's allowing them to sort of not be intimidated by a 10 seed. You know, we read the story in the RJ and how they have improved each year from 13 to 11 to 10. But I think that they're also going to wear that as a chip on their shoulder, considering their national ranking throughout the year and their net ranking.
And Willie, I think you made the point right there. I mean, that's typically not what you would expect from a Lindley Rock team. Obviously, she comes from Stanford and kind of whole buttoned up mentality and just go out there and get your business done. But with Desiree right. Young making those comments, it's kind of like, hey, you know what? I believe in what we're doing and who we are. But what do you think it's going to take for this group after 2 years going to the NCAA tournament and losing in the first round to take that next step and win that first game to get to that second game?
Well, that's just it. I think it took the first 2 years. I think they're tired of losing. And I think it's going to take a full 40 minutes, right? I mean, they were winning in Tucson on Arizona's court against Adia Barnes' team, which was a couple of years removed from playing in the national championship. I mean, this is a team that, you know, Michigan sort of handled them last year, but this is a team that knows how to close, has been dominant outside the New Mexico loss. I mean, this is a team that is sitting 26th in the net rankings. Creighton's 24. I think one of the strongest things, the 30-2 record, they are 15-1 away from Las Vegas. So they haven't really been, they haven't been intimidated by much. There's not a big travel factor for them. They're traveling across the border. Creighton's coming in from Omaha. Creighton 14-3 away from Omaha. I just think it's sticking to their game plan, not sort of listening to Lindy's adjustments, but adjusting within their system, not adjusting to and adapting to Creighton's style of play. They got to force the Blue Jays to play their style of game and really just steal the momentum immediately from the jump, play the way that they play, and force Creighton to play their game. UNLV's used to playing in the lead. We've seen it over the last, or Lindy's first three seasons. They have to do that tomorrow and come out and immediately punch them in the mouth.
Down here at Treasure Island, Cofield and Company, 99-96. Colorado now leads Florida's Walter Clayton Jr. Going crazy down the stretch. So Florida down by three. And we saw Carlin Hartman, the former Rebel assistant, giving five to Walter Clayton. And we got 46 seconds left. Yale is up on Auburn 73-72. You know, the other interesting thing, we talk about Desiree, and Desiree speaking in cocky fashion, I don't care. That's the way she plays. Like, she's just scary out there. She's scary, I'm telling you. Got the knee pads on, throwing herself on the floor. I'll give you the other player that hasn't gotten a lot of coverage, because we talk about the men's team more than the women's team, but what we saw down the stretch, Willie, from DJ Thomas, where the team was put on DJ, and we saw clear outs, and it's like DJ creates something. Amarachi Kimson, there were situations in the San Diego State game where you've got, you know, veteran players out there, and Lindy likes this freshman so much, they were like, all right, you know what, we're going to run stuff, everyone set up on the baseline, Amarachi's going to take some time off the clock, she's going to go, and we're going to react off of that. I mean, she is a really talented freshman.
Right, and that's the type of game that you have to be able to play. That's the type of mentality you have to have if you're going to play for Lindy. I just watched that and just listened to Tara Vanderveer explain when Cam Brink was having, she wasn't having an off night, but at a certain point, Tara Vanderveer, I've watched three games out of their five games I watched in person where she sat Cam for the first quarter. She was like, my starters didn't have it. So I'm going to reach deep into my bench and I'm going to let everybody else spark this team. Where did Lindy come from? She teaches in the same sort of mentality as Tara. You need to be able to come off the bench. You need to be able to come out of the spot, come out of somebody else's spotlight. You need to come out of the shadows, and you need to step up regardless of your role, regardless of who you are, and regardless of what class you are. You always have to be ready to step up into the spotlight and steal the show when your number is called. And so it doesn't shock me that at any given time someone can step up for this team. And yes, she has done just as good a job when her number is called.
You were surprised about the Runner Rebels beating Princeton. I think you were. I know on the show we were to a certain extent. And they did it. And I'm not going to say they did it easily, because down the stretch was, you know, touch and go with the free throws and the press. But what impressed you about the Runner Rebels?
Just their resilience. I mean, I honestly wasn't shocked from a talent standpoint. I just was shocked the fact that they had to go all the way to New Jersey. They were playing an angry Princeton team that just lost to a 12-win Brown team in the semifinals of the Ivy League tournament. They're on that side of the country, and a defensive-minded team that could rattle the running Rebels that you know, just sort of trudged their way through the Mountain West tournament, and they could have went out there a little deflated. Even though they were removed from it, they were happy to be in the postseason. I was impressed with their resilience down the stretch coming out of halftime and really seizing control of the game and then holding off Princeton at the end. I just thought it was a dynamite second half effort that you have to be able to have in the postseason, regardless of what tournament you're on in, whether it's the big dance, the junior prom, whatever. I call it the senior and junior prom. I mean, I really was. I mean, the scary thing is they got to come all the way home, and they got to turn around and possibly go all the way back to Jersey to play Seton Hall if that's the matchup. But I do think that they can beat Boston College just because of the momentum and sort of the motivation now being able to play in their home crowd. I listened to you guys yesterday, and you mentioned it, and I think Adam made a good point, is that the Lady Rebels win tomorrow. All of a sudden, I'm a big believer that programs feed off of one another, whether it's your brother or sister program, whether it's conference programs. You know, we see sort of that contagious nature. If the Lady Rebels put it on Creighton tomorrow, the Runner Rebels are going to be fired up, and the MAC is going to be lit on Sunday. I think they can beat Boston College just feeding off of what they did in the second half.
Willie, one more, and we got about a minute left here. I saw that what The Athletic did, an anonymous poll from coaches on the greatest women's player of all time. We know Caitlin Clark is a gigantic angle going into this women's tournament. What did it say?
It asked the question, and everyone, the consensus was pretty much Cheryl Miller that she's a great player. I don't think that Caitlin Clark will ever go down as the greatest college basketball player in women's history. She's obviously going to go down as the greatest scorer, but let's not forget what Cheryl Miller did on the whole as far as in the paint, on defense, on offense. And she was a sort of a generational player that transitioned the game, right? As we talk about, like with Michael Jordan, transitioning that game. Caitlin Clark has to – I actually think she might have a sort of a ho-hum freshman or a rookie season, because I want to see how she plays on defense, because Iowa doesn't rely on her to play much defense. So she'll definitely go down as one of the greatest promotable players and most marketable players in the NIL era, that's for sure. But as far as the GOAT, I don't think so.
Sporting Tribune, that's where you find Willie Stuff, AP as well. Willie, we're up against it. We appreciate the time today. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, guys, take it easy.
There he is, our man, Willie Ramirez. Oh, my God, this is crazy. So we got a 75-74 game, Yale and Auburn, 33 seconds left, and Colorado was up as much as, 12 with 3 minutes left, and was that a three by Florida? I looked down for a second. It's 100 apiece. Colorado ball, 6 seconds left. Holy moly. What do you run here? Do you put it on the refs and try to throw something into Lampkin and get a foul?
No. You put it in KJ Simpson's hands. Maybe a quick run right into a quick pie pick and roll, get Simpson on the run, getting that inbounds pass. But I think you put it in Simpson's hands and let him try to create and then spread the floor, spread the shooters.
What's happened here down the stretch? How did Colorado let him back in, or Florida's just been hot as hell?
You play not to lose instead of playing to win. You get nervous. You get a little bit tight. You're not doing the things that you were doing those last 8-9 minutes of the game until you got to that point. And, again, you don't have any pressure on you the whole game. Colorado doesn't, because they came in there to play the play-in game. Then they play a really good game, and they're up late. Now the pressure's on you to win this thing. And so Florida's like, hell, we got to just sell out and see what happens. And they did just that, and now they've got a chance to steal one here.
So they throw it in bounds, a baseline jumper, Colorado in, out, in! Uh-oh. Uh-oh. So bomb three off the glass, fall short, unless the refs get involved here for 12 reviews. It looks like Florida is out, and Colorado has moved on. We'll get to the official outcome here in a second. 102-100. Holy cow.